Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a little bit snarky about all things books. This is a brand new podcast, so if you like it, I'd really love your support. Please spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get rolling. Hey everyone, welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. Before we get into today's episode, I have a quick announcement. We are getting to the end of the summer, which means that the podcast bi-weekly summer airing schedule will be ending soon. And I know y'all are probably curious to see what's going to happen come fall. So I wanted to fill you in about that. I will be going back to a weekly airing schedule starting after Labor Day, but things will look just a little bit different than they were prior to this summer. Every other week, I will have full-length episodes, just like you're used to. And then on the off weeks, I will have mini episodes. And these will be episodes where I will have regular readers and book bloggers and bookstagrammers on. It will just be the book recommendation portion of the show. So there will not be a long discussion in the beginning, and there will not be a rate it game at the end. And each episode will be 20 minutes or less. For these mini episodes, this is the opportunity for all y'all to come on the show if you want. I surveyed you all a while back, and I heard that you wanted to hear from regular readers. So I think this will be a really good way to do that. And this will also keep my workload manageable, which I got to be honest, y'all, last winter, it was not manageable. And I realized that if I want to do this over the long term, I can't repeat that again. So to all my listeners, I would love for you to come on the show. I have an application up on the blog right now. Go to sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast/guest application. And I'll also link to that in the show notes. It's just very simple questionnaire, a couple questions about what books you would want to share, et cetera. And all you need to record is a Skype account and a smartphone. All right, on to the 2019 fall book preview. Catherine from the blog Gilmore Guide to Books, my regular co-host for these quarterly book previews, is back again. And we will be talking about books that we're excited about that are coming out for the rest of 2019. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you, as always. So as usual, we are going to start by sharing our success rates from our summer preview show. And there's some better news this time around. I think we're getting better at doing this.
Thank goodness for both of us, right?
I know. It started pretty dismally. Baby steps. So my success rate from the summer preview was 50%, which may not sound spectacularly high, but it is much better than the 38% that came before that for the spring preview. So hooray. What about you? What was your success rate?
My success rate was 63%, which I was fairly happy with, and I only had one DNF. So that really is pretty good for me.
Oh, dang, y'all. You should listen to Catherine's picks. So we're also going to share our best and worst books from the summer preview episode. My best is Recursion by Blake Crouch. And what's your best?
My best is A Prayer for Travelers by Rushika Tomar.
I put that on my list recently after you read it.
I think it really is going to be right up your alley, Sarah. It's kind of a coming of age, two young girls. It's not Southern grit, but it's Southwestern grit. It's set in Nevada.
Oh, interesting.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Well, I hope I get to it this year. It's on my must try before the end of the year TBR list.
There you go.
All right. So worst. This one makes me sad because it's by an author who I loved her last book. Beyond All Reasonable Doubt by Malin Persson Giolito. She is Swedish. I loved her novel Quicksand. And this one, unfortunately, just dragged and dragged. I read over 100 pages. And at that point in the story, the lawyer still had not officially decided to take the case that was going to be the center of the story.
Okay, well, I give you credit for going for 100 pages.
I mean, the only reason I pushed that far, as we know, I don't usually push myself.
Right.
But the only reason I did push myself with that one was because
her previous book was a 5-star book for me. I was like, this has to turn around. And then I gave up. All right, what was your worst?
My worst was Bunny by Mona Awad. I was all up for it because it was an outsider girl at college who gets befriended by the mean girls. But I DNF'd it at about 30 pages. The best I can say is that if you're in your 20s, lying semi-drunk on a beach, you might enjoy it. But otherwise, it was a hot mess. So that was my only DNF.
All right. So those are your best and worst. Here's how we'll do this for this quarterly preview. Catherine and I each picked 9 books coming out between August and December. And that may sound like not a lot of books for a lot of months, but it's actually not, because publishing gets a little weird this time of year. A lot of books come out in September and October, and it's the big buzzy fall book season. It's a lot of the very well-known authors and a lot of the books that publishers think are going to do the best out of the whole year. It's also a lot of heavier literary fiction. Then come November and December, publishers really sort of drop off publishing books. There's not much out there. So that's why we're kind of lumping all these months in together. And August is pretty generally sparse as well, although I have found a couple August books that I love.
And my August is bigger than it's been in years past. It seems as if it's shifted a little bit from September to August, but that may be just the genre I read, but I was surprised.
I hear you. So because publishing is a little strange, we wanted to leave ourselves open to pick the 9 books each of us are most excited about for the entirety of fall and not limit ourselves to, let's say, 4 books for September and 4 for October and 4 for November, because it just doesn't work like that right now. And we didn't want to give you books that we were just using to fill spots. We wanted to give you our 9 favorites that we're most excited about. And unless otherwise mentioned, we have not read these books yet, but I have actually read 2.5 of the books I'll be sharing. So I will point those out to you when we get there. So I'm going to start out with my first book, which is an August book that is actually already out by the time this episode airs. It's called The Dearly Beloved by Carol Wall. It came out August 13th, and it's literary fiction. The premise is 2 ministers, Charles and James, are hired to co-lead the congregation of New York City's Third Presbyterian Church in the 1960s. And their families become very close and kind of inextricably linked despite their different beliefs. Anne Bogle of Modern Mrs. Darcy did share this book in an episode of One Great Book, which is her Patreon-only podcast for new releases. And Catherine's bookseller friend out in Seattle, Pam Cady, recommended it as well. And I have gotten some good recommendations from her.
She's a go-to recommendation source.
And she, through you, is actually the first person to put this on my radar. All right. So I rated it 4.5 stars, which is very high for me. It is a character-driven novel, but I was very quickly turning the pages. I couldn't put it down. The writing style, but not the story, is sort of reminiscent of Mary Beth Keane's in Ask Again, Yes. It's a simple but very compelling writing style, and that's the kind of writing I like. I was a little nervous to read this book because I'm not very religious, and I didn't know if this was going to go deep down the rabbit hole of religion, how I would feel about it. However, each character in this book, the main characters, so the 2 ministers and their wives, they all have very, very different relationships to their faith, and some have no relationship at all. So you get all of these different perspectives towards religion and faith, and each character struggles with their faith over the course of the book. So you see the characters evolving and shifting as far as what they believe and don't believe. Because of that, I feel like most people will identify with at least one of them as far as their religious beliefs. And that's why I think, you know, you shouldn't be scared of this book, even if you're not religious.
That's good to hear, because as Pam was describing it to me, I thought, oh, I don't know that I want to dive into religion right now. And she said the same thing you did. She said, no, it's a perspective on all the different approaches to faith.
Yes.
That intrigued me.
And this book was pretty quiet to start out. It's most definitely a story about characters' inner lives rather than big events that happen, although there are, you know, some pinnacle events that happen throughout the book. But it was a book that gradually got under my skin. It really made me think. And I did want to know what was going to happen to these people. And because it made me think so much, I do think it would be an awesome book club pick. So it's going to go on my book club recommendations list for sure. And that is The Dearly Beloved by Kara Wall. It's already out. Go grab it. All right, Catherine, what is your first pick?
Well, as I was going through my list of reading for the rest of the year, I didn't think I had a theme, but when I started prepping for today, I realized there was, and that's that normally my picks tend to be debuts. I mean, we both love debut authors.
Yes. I might have adopted that theme for today.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And actually, I should have said, you all, Dearly Beloved is a debut. I forgot to say that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad because in this particular instance, I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum. All of my reading coming up throughout the rest of the year are authors known to me.
I expect like an 80% success rate from you from this episode.
I'm hoping. Gosh, I'm hoping. Well, let me say this. I'm leading with my best bet, and that is, because she's never written anything I didn't love, Louise Penny is back on August 27th with a new Chief Inspector Gamache book called A Better Man. I always look forward to her writing, but this one is an even bigger deal because in the last novel in this series, there was complete upheaval in all of the main characters' lives. And I don't mean to tease your listeners, but I haven't even looked up the premise of the book. I just know it's the next book in his series. And I know your mother loves him.
She does.
I hope you've pre-ordered a copy for her.
Yes.
There are just so many questions. I'm really excited.
Catherine, I don't love Louise Penny.
Did you try her?
I did. I tried the first book in the series and I don't know. It was slow and kind of, I couldn't get into it.
It is. Maybe try the second. If you try the second and that one doesn't work, but I thought the same thing about A Still Life.
Just skip the first one? Can I do that?
It's not ideal, but if you start in the second one, you still will come to know the characters well enough. But a lot of people have said that the first one was slower, that they didn't know if they were going to stick with her. And then by book three, you're sold. So I would not cut her off for that.
So when Meredith and Katie from the Currently Reading podcast came on, we had a similar conversation. And they said, it really doesn't get really, really good until book six, but then it really takes off. And I'm like, who is going to read five books that it's not really good for five books and still even make it to book six?
Yeah, I would have to disagree with them.
I mean, obviously, a ton of people do.
Right. No, I would disagree. I thought the first one was slow, but like any author, any good author, they get better and better and better. And she's just gotten so strong in her craft. And yes, the later books, they're really engrossing, but you miss so much of the personal history of the characters.
Right.
And they are so quirky and their lives are completely intertwined. That's why I love the books. It is not just your straightforward murder mystery. It's always a little odd. It often involves someone in this tiny town of Three Pines, which isn't even on a map. Try book two. If you really can't get into it, then she might not be the person for you.
Okay. I feel like I might have just alienated much of my audience right now. Sorry, y'all. So that was A Better Man by Louise Penny coming out August 27th, which is this coming Tuesday. So my next pick is another debut, also an August book. This one's called The Other's Gold by Elizabeth Ames, and it's coming out August 27th, the same day as A Better Man. Again, this is literary fiction. So this is the story of four female friends that meet in college and they kind of go through life together. And I'm being very vague with that premise because I don't know really how to get into more detail without spoiling things. It's just kind of the story of these girls' lives. This was a 5-star book for me. And I also need to preface my thoughts about it with the fact that you will also hear Annie Jones and I talk about this book on the next episode. We recorded these episodes out of order. So when I recorded with Annie, I had not yet read this, but now I have read it. So I'm sorry that the episodes are out of order, but I did just want to be transparent about that. Not ideal, but it is what it is.
I added it to my TBR the minute you let me know how much you liked it.
I think you'll like it.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds right up my alley.
The premise of this story is absolutely up my alley. Campus novel, female friendships, character-driven story. I love that. However, they can sometimes be really bad. It all comes down to the intangibles for these kinds of books. And this one, the intangibles were awesome. To give the book a little bit of structure, the author segmented the story into four mistakes. So each girl in the story makes big mistake in their life. And it talks about how each mistake affects not only that particular girl, but the rest of the group, you know, when they end up having spouses later in life, family members, friend, other friends, stuff like that. So you get to see all the ripple effects. I went into it thinking these four mistakes were going to be like run-of-the-mill life mistakes that you hear about all the time. I got to tell you, definitely with three out of the four mistakes, maybe all four, never would have guessed. Never have heard about anything like this happening.
What?
Yes. She got very creative. And that's what bumped what might have been a four-star book for me up to five.
Okay.
These are not your run-of-the-mill life screw-ups. The writing is gorgeous, but let me warn y'all, it did take me a little bit to settle into it because it requires a little more concentration than I generally like to give, but I did settle into it. The sentences are long sometimes, and that's why I say that. The other thing I loved about this one was the four friends are each pretty dazzling in their own specific way, but they have faults as well. And when they all get together, they have this kind of inexplicable aura about them. It's kind of the group on campus that you see, and they're all just shining stars. And I don't mean like academic stars and athletic stars and all that. I just mean like something about their personalities. When they walk in a room, they own it, and people look at them, and they want to be a part of the group, but they can't quite get in. They all have this pull on each other too, which goes in positive and negative directions throughout their lives.
Okay, that is a lot.
That's a lot.
To process.
Yeah. I hope I haven't oversold it.
No.
So the author and her husband live as resident faculty members at Harvard on campus. So she had a good, you know, vantage point from which to write this book, living among her characters, essentially.
Right.
And it was also blurbed by Celeste Ng and Jesmyn Ward.
Ooh.
That was The Other's Gold by Elizabeth Ames. Coming out August 27th on Tuesday. Catherine, what is your next book?
My next book is A Door to the Earth, which also comes out at the end of August on the 27th. And it's by Amy Waldman. Her debut, The Submissions, was the first novel I read about the aftermath of 9/11.
Oh.
That gave me perspective on how many different kinds of people were impacted. As you can tell from the title, it's about the submissions to rebuild or to build the memorial to replace the World Trade Center.
Oh, interesting. Was that fiction or nonfiction?
No, it's fiction. She's literary fiction.
Okay, so she took the real events and then kind of made...
Exactly. And it was incredibly nuanced and thought-provoking, but it didn't get much attention. So this new book, A Door to the Earth, is also kind of a post 9/11 novel, and it's about an Afghan American young woman who has just graduated from college, and she's torn between her upbringing in America and her cultural identity. So she discovers a memoir written by a woman who set up a women's clinic in Afghanistan. This young woman decides to go to Afghanistan and work in the clinic to get a better sense of where she comes from and what life is really like there. But when she gets there, nothing is as she expects, either in the way the clinic is run or in life in Afghanistan. And when tensions heat up between the U.S. and Afghanistan, she finds herself caught in the middle. And I just feel as if this is going to be strong storytelling about an issue that's still explosive in this country, and that's racial and national identity.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was A Door in the Earth by Amy Waldman, and it's coming out August 27th. That would be Tuesday. So my next book is called The Secrets We Kept by Laura Prescott, and it is also a debut, my third debut in a row. This one's coming out on September 3rd, and this one is historical fiction, which y'all know I have a finicky relationship with.
Yes.
But not with this book. So I'm kind of burned out of World War II fiction, but what I'm not burned out of is the Cold War, and that's what this is about. The premise is there are two secretaries that work in the CIA, and they're not just secretaries. That's like their cover. So one is an experienced spy, and the other one has no experience, but her mother was born in Russia. I actually think she might have been born in Russia and brought to the United States as a very young child. But she is Russian by blood, I guess. And they are tasked with smuggling the yet unpublished Dr. Zhivago out of the USSR so it can be published in the United States.
Oh.
Yeah. Really fascinating. So it alternates between two storylines. The first one being the story of Boris Pasternak, who is the author of Dr. Zhivago, and his love affair with Olga, his mistress, who was rumored to be the muse for the character of Laura in the book. And then the story of the CIA spies trying to smuggle the book into the U.S.
Ooh, this sounds really good. I have a copy, so I'm really happy you're vetting this for me.
I really hadn't heard much about it other than somebody said it was big at the Book Expo conference that a lot of people were talking about it. But other than that, I didn't really know anyone personally that had read it yet. So it was a little bit of a risk for me. However, I'm loving it. I'm about 65% through right now, and I'm flying through it. It's very readable. It goes quickly. It's not especially short book. I think it's about average, but I feel like you could sit down and read it in a weekend because the pace of it flies and the writing style makes it fly easily. And I've always been really fascinated by the Cold War. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it was what was going on when I was a kid. I mean, I remember lying in bed thinking that like we were going to hear the air raid siren because there was a missile coming at us from Russia.
Or doing the drills in school.
Yes.
Where you had to get under your desk.
Yep.
I remember that.
And then I was a swimmer growing up. I love watching the Olympics. And I remember all the East German women swimmers.
Steroids gone crazy.
And they were just so stone-faced all the time, and they sort of were repellent to me, but also fascinating, if you know what I mean.
Repellent, but like a machine.
Yeah.
They didn't seem real.
They have no emotion whatsoever.
Never, but they just plowed through the competition.
Yeah. Well, we know why now. So anyway, I've always kind of had a fascination with the Cold War. And this book is being marketed by the publisher as Mad Men meets Hidden Figures. I would say that's pretty accurate. And definitely the prologue opens with a scene out of the typing pool at the CIA, and it is very Mad Men-esque. But I love that it addresses the whole theme of using literature as a weapon in the Cold War and propaganda, and how communist countries used their stars, quote unquote, as propaganda for the country. And I know that not only with artists and writers, they also did it with athletes. If I had to say one thing about it, I would say it's just a dang good story. And it's been blurbed by Kate Quinn, who wrote The Alice Network. And one other random fact, it is being published by the original, I guess, U.S. publisher of Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, interesting.
And there was a 21 publisher bidding war for this book. That is The Secrets We Kept by Laura Prescott. And also, y'all, I think this is the type of book that is going to be really good for gifting to people around the holidays. It's one of those, I hate taking a term from somebody else, but I'm trying to think of a better term of my own and I can't. I'm stealing this from Book Riot, Rebecca Shinsky and Jeff O'Neill. They call it the Swiss Army recommendation, meaning it's a book that you can kind of, without being nervous, recommend it to almost anybody.
That sounds good.
All right, Catherine, what is your next book?
I know he's not for everyone, but I have always found Salman Rushdie to be one of the most incredible storytellers I've ever read. When I saw he was taking on Don Quixote, I was immediately intrigued because that is one of the most iconic satirical stories of unrequited love and almost pathological idealism, which are all concepts tailor-made for Rushdie. So the book is Quixote. It comes out September 9th, and in it, there's a main character, Sam, who is a so-so spy novelist who changes gears and writes a book with a character named Quixote who's in love with a TV star. And Quixote goes on a quest across America with his partner, Sancho, to prove himself worthy of her, just like Don Quixote did with Dulcinea. At the same time, Sam has some real life issues of his own. So the novel is set in the present day, which means I'm expecting some really sharp humor and a provocative take on what's happening in America right now, as well as pop culture, because he's in love with a TV star.
Oh, much like Salman Rushdie.
Right, exactly. I didn't even think of that.
For the listeners, I'm referring to Padma from Top Chef. They're no longer in love, but they were married at one time.
That's right. So at the same time, what I like about Rushdie is at the same time as he's poking a stick at the world around him, he can be unexpectedly tender and hopeful in the way he looks at the world. And that combination always works for me in my literary fiction. So that's Quixote, and it comes out September 9th.
And do you have to have read the original classic, Don Quixote, to appreciate this?
I'm going to say no, because quite honestly, Sarah, I'm not sure I have.
Okay.
I'm going to say no, you don't need to. This will stand on its own.
All right, cool. That was Quixote by Salman Rushdie. And we actually realized it's coming out September 3rd, not September 9th. So there you have it. All right. My next book is from a big time star. It's called Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell, and it's coming out September 10th. I think probably most of you are familiar with Malcolm Gladwell, or at least have heard of him, but this is nonfiction, sort of behavioral science. Is that what you would call him? Behavioral science?
Yes. A social scientist?
Yeah. He's sort of a man of his own, I think.
He is. He's an outlier.
Yeah.
Just like one of his books.
Good one. This latest of Malcolm Gladwell's. Yeah. So he wrote Outliers. He wrote The Tipping Point. So this is supposedly an examination of how people interact with strangers. And I'm quoting now, why it often goes awry and what it says about us. And he talks about this topic through a lot of examples. And he covers things like the Bernie Madoff scandal, Amanda Knox trial, the suicide of Sylvia Plath, which I thought was interesting, thrown in with all these current events.
Right.
So if y'all remember back in episode 17, which Jacqueline and Rachel of the Pingle Sisters came on, and Jacqueline actually shared this as an upcoming release she was excited about. So if you remember hearing about it back then, but it's been a while, so I thought I would share it anyway. I love Gladwell's non-traditional take on issues that have been covered in the media sort of ad nauseum, and he looks at those issues and his brain works so differently, at least than mine, and looks at them from these totally different angles that I never would have considered or thought about, but that when he explains it, makes sense to me. So I like that. I looked at the Goodreads reviews. The one knock on this book is that he apparently just uses example after example after example and only really talks about the overarching theme at the very beginning of the book and at the very end of the book. And some people thought there should have been more in-depth analysis of the overarching theme. But I don't know that I care particularly about that, because I think I'm going to be interested in his take on each individual issue without any overarching theme.
Right. If he does get in depth with them as opposed to just a glossing.
Right. Which I don't think he will gloss. And he has the podcast Revisionist History. It's in the middle of a season right now. Season 3, maybe? I can't remember. But I listen to that podcast and I love that podcast as well. And he does not gloss over things in that podcast.
Okay, so he goes deep.
Yeah. That is Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell, and it's coming out on September 10th. Catherine, what is your next book?
My next book, I said I was staying with authors I know, and I wasn't kidding, because my next author is Alice Hoffman, who almost always makes me happy with her writing. I haven't loved every one of her novels, but I've loved some of them, like The Dove Keepers and The Rules of Magic, which I think you also liked, didn't you?
I did, despite not thinking I would.
Right. Well, those two I've loved so much that they make up for the others that have been not as great. Anyway, like Salman Rushdie, she can tell a story like nobody's business. So on September 24th, her new novel, The World That We Knew, comes out. It's set in Berlin in 1941, and it's about a mother who is desperate to save her daughter, Leah, from the Nazis, so she takes her to a rabbi she hopes can smuggle her out of Germany. This is where Hoffman's magical realism and incredible imagination and storytelling kick in. The rabbi's daughter, her name is Eddie, creates a golem, and I don't know if you know what that is.
I do not. What is a golem?
They've shown up in fiction. It's a mythical Jewish creature created out of, and I apologize to anyone Jewish if I'm just going to make a hash of this, but created out of mud or inert material and brought to life. And it's either used as a tool of vengeance or protection. It's based on a 16th century Jewish rabbi. I mean, there is history to it, but Etta creates a golem, and it's a woman named Ava, and her sole purpose is to protect Leah at all costs. And they have, you know, superhuman powers, strength and whatever. So the novel goes from there, following the three women, Etta, Leah, and Ava, in their lives. So it just looks to be sweeping in its scope and its themes, because you've got good versus evil, you've got the Nazis. The women do get out and go to Paris. I feel like it's going to be one of those grand, immersive stories that I can't put down.
I might read that too, but I'm going to let you read it first and tell me if I should read it.
You can let me vet it.
Because I'm a little more particular about the magical realism.
Exactly. And that's The World That We Knew, and it comes out on September 24th.
All right. So my next book is also by a trusted author. And this is one of my all-time favorite authors. She's one that I will buy her book no matter what without knowing anything about it. It is The Dutch House by Ann Patchett, coming out September 24th.
Oh, yes.
And for those of you who don't know Ann Patchett, she writes literary fiction, and some of her more famous novels are Bel Canto, Commonwealth, which is my favorite of hers so far, State of Wonder, and those are the ones that I've read. But she, to me, writes family dysfunction better than almost anybody. And that's what this novel's about. So a brother and a sister, Danny and Maeve, tell the story of their family and their childhood home, which is called the Dutch House, which their father bought after making it big in real estate after World War II. And I realize that's vague. It's another one of these sort of character-driven family stories that you can't put the plot in that much detail. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I know a couple other people that have read it already. Ann Bogle has read it and shared it on an episode of One Great Book, the Patreon version. Her favorite book of Ann Patchett's is Bel Canto.
I haven't read it. Have you?
I have read it. It was not my favorite of hers.
It just didn't sound appealing to me. I liked her other works better, so I've never tried it.
Yeah, me too. But Ann said she thinks that Bel Canto is Patchett's masterpiece, but that this one came close.
Oh, okay.
And then Tyler Goodson, who is a bookseller at the Avid Bookshop in Athens, Georgia, and another person I follow on Instagram for his recommendations, he rated it 4 stars as well. So I'm hopeful. So from what I'm getting from the early reviews of this one, the house really does feel like a character in and of itself, which I would expect, given the title. The writing is gorgeous in an accessible way, which also I feel like is characteristic of Ann Patchett and one of the reasons I like her immensely. And this is a family drama, and she did family drama in Commonwealth so very well. So I'm expecting that again. It's family secrets, past and present timelines, all the kind of stuff you would expect from a family drama. And I did not want to read too deep into the reviews on this book because I really just want to kind of go in and dive in with Ann Patchett, kind of blind. So that's what I'm going to do. So that was The Dutch House by Ann Patchett, coming out September 24th. And Catherine, what is your next book?
Well, my next book is A Case of Knowing the Author, but it's a debut.
debut novel.
Debut novel, exactly. I was overwhelmed by Ta-Nehisi Coates' memoir, Between the World and Me, and I wondered if he would ever venture into fiction, and now he has. So this is called The Water Dancer, and it comes out on September 24th. It's the story of Hiram, who is a young slave whose family is sold away when he's still a child, and he has a power which is not described in the synopsis, so there is magical realism, but it allows him to not only survive slavery, but fight against it. And I haven't read any of the book yet, but it's giving me a sense of The Girl Who Would Be King, which I absolutely loved, in that there is the magical realism, but it's really only as a metaphor about the fortitude needed to live with the horrors of slavery. The novel is going to go from the South, where Hiram is on a Virginia plantation, to his escape, living in the wilderness, and then ultimately getting to the North, where he becomes involved in the, you know, the underground war between slaves and the slavers. And I think it's also going to be kind of an odyssey book where he's trying to get back the family that he lost.
Gotcha.
I feel like this is going to be a little bit like the Nickel Boys.
Right. I was thinking Underground Railroad as you were talking because of the magical realism.
Underground Railroad as well. And I just know it's going to be difficult reading.
Yep.
But I just feel they're both such strong writers that these are voices and stories that need to be heard.
I feel like this could be like the biggest book of fall, possibly, as long as he translates to fiction well.
I think it could be too. That's The Water Dancer, and it comes out on September 24th.
Great. My next book is my only October release, which is kind of strange. I don't know why it worked out that way. But again, a trusted author, literary fiction. This one's called All This Could Be Yours by Jamie Attenberg, coming out on October 22nd. And Jamie Attenberg wrote The Middlesteens, she wrote All Grown Up, and she wrote St. Maisie. And I have not read The Middlesteens yet, but I did read St. Maisie and I did read All Grown Up. And All Grown Up was 5 stars for me. I know it was not that way for everyone. It was sort of a divisive book. And I feel like she is that kind of an author that you either like her or you don't kind of thing. And I'll explain why later. So the premise of this one, it's another family drama. And a lawyer and mother, the same person, lawyer and mother, Alex, gathers with her family in her hometown of New Orleans. And her powerful father is on his deathbed. So they're all congregated around his deathbed, and they're trying to learn more about him. He's been this sort of enigma their whole lives. All they know about him is he has a bad reputation, but they're kind of trying to dig deeper and find out more. From what I hear, this novel is more similar to The Middlesteens than it is some of her others, which is, the one of hers I have not read. And the novel of hers that I rated 5 stars, All Grown Up, the reason I loved it so much was she's got this very dry, morbid, snarky sense of humor. Her writing's really raw and she has excellent social commentary. And I feel like all of that would translate really well to a deathbed family drama.
This sounds like the sort of thing I would love.
I think you would like it. And apparently also this one goes deep into what it's like for the wife and children of a powerful but not necessarily scrupulous man. And that theme really intrigues me.
Okay.
So that was All This Could Be Yours by Jamie Attenberg, coming out October 22nd. Catherine, what is your next book?
Well, since September was such a big month for thought-provoking literary fiction for me, I am happy to start October off with something lighter. And Kate Reculia, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, her last novel, Bellwether Rhapsody.
Yes. I have not read it, but I remember a lot of people recommending it at a certain time.
It is a totally fabulous amalgam of humor, magical realism, and quirky characters. The kind of reading that makes me laugh out loud. So I am ready for her new novel, which is Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts. And that comes out on October 8th. And it looks to be the same sort of literary mashup. You have an oddball introvert named Tuesday, a dead billionaire, and a treasure hunt that leads to a share of his estate. The deal is it's not a straightforward hunt. Some of the clues are very personal to each of the searchers, and they may have to overcome fears as well as expose secrets to get to the next clue. This may be a case of me getting played by the marketing synopsis, but it sounds like the kind of fun, quirky reading I enjoy.
Well, you've read her before.
Right. I loved Bellwether Rhapsody. You should read it. You don't need to be put off by the magical realism. It's subtle.
Is it me, or have we had a lot of magical realism books today?
I think that might be my minor theme. My major is authors I know. My minor is magical realism. You're right.
I never would have expected that.
I wouldn't either. I didn't even notice it.
All right. So that was Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts by Kate Reculia, out October 8th. Okay. So my next book is nonfiction, and it's coming out in November, which is appropriate for that month, nonfiction November.
Mm-hmm.
It is The Great Pretender by Susanna Kalin, coming out November 5th. And she is the author of the memoir Brain on Fire.
Which was so good.
So good. It came out a couple years ago. It got pretty popular. So I feel like many of you might have read it or even heard of, or at least heard of it. It was her own personal story of sort of going inexplicably crazy and then having to go through the psychiatric world and the medical world in general to come to a diagnosis about what happened to her. So because of her background, I do think she is uniquely positioned to write The Great Pretender, and you'll understand why when I tell you what it's about. So I'm going to try to get this right. It's complicated. In the 1970s, there was an experiment led by a Stanford psychologist, which sent seven sane people undercover into insane asylums across the country. And the purpose was to, I'm quoting now, to quote, test the legitimacy of psychiatry's labels. So they were expected to stay in the asylums until they'd proven themselves to be sane.
Okay, this is creeping me out already.
Yeah. So these people come out and they have all these stories of all kinds of diagnoses that they were given, kinds of treatments they were put through. And Kalin explores what all this means for the mental illness industry today. And she talks about how the experiment back then in the 70s may not have been what it seemed. So there may have been some fishy stuff going on. So, woo, that was a lot.
It is.
And the reviews on Goodreads are very high, 4.38 stars. So I am really looking forward to this one. She's also a New York Post reporter. All right. So that was The Great Pretender by Susanna Kalin. Oh, and her last name, y'all, in case you don't recognize this name by how I say it, it's spelled C-A-H-A-L-A-N. But from what I could research on the internet, is pronounced Kalin. All right, Catherine, what is your next book?
My next book is the only nonfiction on my list, which is a surprise, right? That I have any nonfiction at all.
That is a surprise for you.
I know. It's called Burn It Down. And the subtitle of the book is what makes me want to read it. The subtitle is Women Writing About Anger. I know Three Women has been a big book for a lot of people this summer. I mean, everyone is talking about it. It's getting all this buzz. And I think it's because it deals with women's sexuality. But for me, anger is a much larger and more important issue. As a woman who was raised to believe that anger was absolutely not an emotion to have, much less show, I'm really curious to see these essays and see the representations of anger the author presents. It discusses how do women express their anger? Who gets to be angry? Will we express it individually or collectively? I feel like it's really tapping into the zeitgeist of what's going on right now with Me Too and all the various movements, I think, as women are finding their voices.
Right.
It's a series of essays. The author or editor is Lily Danziger. And it's called Burn It Down, Women Writing About Anger, and it comes out October 8th.
Awesome. So my next book is also coming out in November fiction this time. It's called Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. And he's a pretty popular author, I think, but I have not read him yet.
He wrote Perfect Little World, and I really liked it. It was an unusual premise, but so well written.
And he also wrote The Family Fang, which I don't know anything about. I remember when Perfect Little World came out, and I think what turned me off was the premise was definitely unusual, but it's also something that, like, you got to stretch your imagination a little bit.
Right.
I like my books firmly set in reality.
Mm-hmm.
In general, although I have liked some magical realism things here and there if they're very, very well done and not over the top and eye-rolly. So it's about two boarding school best friends, Madison, who's wealthy, and Lillian, who's there on scholarship. And they lose touch after school, but they come together again later in life when Madison needs Lillian to care for her two stepchildren, who apparently spontaneously combust into flames whenever they get upset. So this is a book I normally would look at the premise, roll my eyes, and move on. But the Goodreads reviewers, and I'm generalizing here, but a lot of the reviews said that they were skeptical of the premise as well because it just sounded ridiculous, but that it's executed really, really well. So that's why I'm giving this a chance. Liberty Hardy read it and said it was one of her favorite books of the year. I also know that Kevin Wilson has a dark sense of humor, yet the books are also very warm, which is kind of strange that that can all coexist together. But I like that, and that's another reason I'm going to give it a chance. So this is a bit of a risk for me.
You're stretching yourself.
I am. Look at me. I am stretching myself. That was Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson, coming out November 5th. Catherine, what is your next book?
My next pick, I'm guessing, is going to be of no interest to you. It's Olive Again by Elizabeth Strout. I've never read Olive Kitteridge, but I know two things about it. It won the Pulitzer Prize, and you DNF'd it. So I have to ask, why?
Okay, first of all, for me, Pulitzer Prize medallions on the front of a book is a run far away sign.
Okay.
I have terrible, terrible luck with Pulitzer Prize winners. Also, I did read Olive Kitteridge last winter. So I read it, you know, very late, well after it had won the Pulitzer and gotten all the hype. But I do love Elizabeth Strout, and I loved her other books, My Name is Lucy Barton and Anything
Right,
is Possible.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I know. I loved those. But for some reason with Olive Kitteridge, I liked Olive the character. She's kind of curmudgeonly, but the structure of the book is interconnected short stories. So you'll read one story where Olive's in it, but may not be the focal point, but the focal point is somebody else in the town. And then the next story is about yet another person in the town who might have made a small appearance in the previous story. And that has worked for me before. So like Anything is Possible, her follow-up to My Name is Lucy Barton was that structure as well. And that did work for me. For whatever reason, this one, every time I finally figured out who we're talking about, what their relation is to Olive, the story was over. And then we move on to the next. And I just got frustrated with that.
Okay.
And I wanted more of Olive. She's in the background in a lot of those stories, and I wanted more of her.
Okay.
I am definitely in the minority on this, though. Most people love that book.
I'm going to keep an open mind because Pam, who we mentioned earlier,
yes,
is the person who told me about it. She loved it. And she said, I didn't need to read Olive Kitteridge first.
Oh, interesting. All right, I'm going to put it back on my list.
Maybe so. I think I'm going to read it anyway because I looked it up. It's so short. It's like, what, 270 pages?
Yes. And all her books are short like that.
Yeah, that's true. But as far as describing Olive Again, because I have no background on the original story, I'm just left with Goodreads, which is describing it as a continuation of her life and observations of the community around her in Crosby, Maine. So she may be going with the same structure you're talking about.
That was going to be my question.
I know. I have no idea, but she may just like that interconnected. But it's possible it will be more Olive.
Right.
So for me, I'm wondering if it's going to have that kind of Richard Russo Empire Falls vibe or Kent Hariff.
Oh, love him.
You know, that whole small town life vibe, which if she does, because I agree with you, I like her writing. If it's that same feel, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be really good.
I'm going to let you vet it for me.
And it's Olive again.
Coming out October 8th. All right. We have my last book coming up. And then Catherine has one more. So my last book is called The Innocence by Michael Crummy. And it's coming out November 12th. And Michael Crummy is actually a Canadian author. This one is literary fiction. And he wrote the novel Sweetland, which came out a couple years ago and was one of my favorite books of the year it came out. Actually, it came out in 2015. So this is a trusted author for me. The reason I loved Sweetland is the writing is absolutely gorgeous. And Crummy is a poet as well. And I don't particularly like poetry, but I do feel like poets that transition into prose tend to be really good writers.
Right.
So being that Crummy is Canadian, his books are set in Canada. Sweetland was also set in a very isolated area of Canada, and so is The Innocence. It's set in an isolated area of Newfoundland. So it's about an orphaned brother and sister. I don't know why they're left on this isolated stretch of coast along Newfoundland, but they are, and so they have to survive. I found on Goodreads a reviewer who had a paper copy of The Galley for this book. And I have the e-galley, and I checked the e-galley, and this is not in it. So I want to caveat what I'm about to say. But in the paper galley, this reviewer said that there's a little piece in there saying that this story was inspired by something Crummy found in some archives. An 18th century clergyman found an adolescent brother and sister living alone in an isolated area of the Newfoundland coast. And he tried to approach by boat and was driven away at gunpoint by the children.
Whoa. Okay.
So that sounds interesting to me. And the reviews on Goodreads said this is, might be his most accessible book yet. And publishers are calling, I'm always skeptical when publishers say this, so take this with a grain of salt, but they use the word unputdownable, which I love that word when it's used by people that are not getting paid to sell the book, right?
Right, right. But then I'm cantankerous enough to think, oh, I'll put it down.
And this one is blurbed by Emma Donahue, who wrote Room, and it's being compared to Room. And also Ron Rash, who I have not read, but I know he's a kind of a legend. So that was The Innocence by Michael Crummy, coming out November 12th. And Catherine, what is your last book?
My last book is a biggie for all your listeners and anyone who happens to remember. I lambasted this author as having betrayed me with her last novel because I loved her so much and thought that particular novel was so bad. I may have said I was never going to read her again.
I think you did say that.
Okay, well.
On this very podcast.
I'm eating my words. Sophie Kinsella is back. But this time, instead of trying to create a new character, she's back with Becky Bloomwood, the Shopaholic. It's a series. I think there are 9 or 10 of them. This time, she's going with Christmas, which lends itself so perfectly to chick lit. It's called Christmas Shopaholic. It's going to be out October 15th, and I'm really hoping, because the Shopaholic series still stands as my favorite chick lit when I just want to laugh. Becky is such a ditz with no common sense, and yet she pulls it through at the end. There's just no mental energy required to read these books. They are frothy, fizzy, cotton candy, eat it, enjoy it, and it disappears reading. And sometimes that's exactly what I need. So, Sophie, if you're listening, please don't abuse my faith in coming back to you. This book had better be really good.
Dear God, I hope she is not listening after everything we have said.
She probably isn't because she's British, but the Shopaholic series, it's the first chick lit I ever read. And I thought, oh, if everyone could write it this well, I would love it all the time. But I really haven't had success with it. But it is the perfect, you know, whatever you want to call it, palate cleanser. It just allows me to shed all the heavy literary fiction. It allows me to shed the world and just escape and laugh because she's sharp and she's funny. She may be silly, but she's not stupid. That's the line for me. If things cross over into stupid, I just cannot deal with them. And Consilla doesn't do that. She keeps it sharp.
And let's face it, we all need a book like that sometimes.
Exactly. So that's Christmas Shopaholic, and it comes out October 15th.
So Catherine and I like to end every preview episode with picking our number one book of the upcoming season that we are excited about. Mine is The Other's Gold by Elizabeth Ames, but I've got to caveat that because I'm picking it because I've already read it and I know it's 5 stars. I loved it. It's awesome. I actually had an embarrassment of riches this time around. So if I had not already read The Other's Gold, the book that I was most excited about would definitely be The Dutch House by Ann Patchett.
Good backup choice.
If I were to stick literally to the words, the number one book I am most excited about for fall, it would have to be The Dutch House. The only thing that made me as excited about The Other's Gold is the fact that I read it already. I didn't have the level of excitement going into it, if you know what I mean.
No, exactly. Which is even better.
Yes.
It was a surprise. It was a bonus.
For sure. I did have some level of excitement, as y'all will hear on the next episode when Annie Jones and I talk about this book. All right, Catherine, what is your number one pick?
Mine is almost too easy. I am just going to go with Louise Penny, A Better Man, simply because she has never let me down. I think the lowest I've ever rated any of her books is 3 stars, which for me is good.
Yeah, y'all, Catherine's a tough rater. 3 stars for you means something different than 3 stars for me.
Well, it means good. Good enough to read it. And then you have 4 and 5, which mean great and amazing to me.
Yeah.
5 is perfection. It means there's absolutely nothing about this book I would change. Some of her books have been 5 stars for me. So I'm going to go with A Better Man just because she's never let me down.
Well, there you have it, everybody. Fall books. And as always, we will have links to all these books in the show notes. I know that it's a lot to take in, so don't worry. You can refer back. And Catherine, tell everyone where they can find you online. And y'all go follow Catherine she's more on her blog than she is on Instagram.
I kind of am. Yeah. Sorry. I'm old school.
It's okay. But go follow her because she writes beautiful reviews.
Oh, thank you. You're so sweet.
But tell everyone where to find you.
It's The Gilmore Guide to Books. So it's www.gilmoreguidetobooks.com.
And she's on Instagram at Gilmore Guide.
Yep.
Y'all also stay tuned tomorrow for my most anticipated books of fall blog post. And I just want to kind of explain for a minute the purpose of doing a podcast and a blog post for the same topic and what you can find in each one. So we obviously have to pre-record this podcast. It takes me a while to edit these things. So we are recording this show, which is going to air. It's airing on August 21st. We are recording it on August 1st. So that's, 20 days right there. So obviously I can read some more books between record date and air date, right? So in the blog post that's going to come up tomorrow, you will have some new books on the list that we did not talk about today because I couldn't talk about everything. You'll also have some updates on books that we did talk about today that I have since read between record date and air date. And I will tell you if I DNF'd any of those, if I finished it and what my rating was, etc. So you kind of look to the blog post coming out the day after the podcast as a little update and also some extra books. I hope that makes sense.
It does to me because I do the same thing. There, I have other choices. I just narrowed it down. So I think it's perfect.
So look for Catherine's post as well. There is no new podcast next week, but in 2 weeks, we will have the first episode of the new school year featuring one of my dream guests. And also, when I surveyed you all back in February, the number one most requested guest by far. And that is Annie Jones, who is the owner of the Bookshelf bookstore in Thomasville, Georgia, and also the co-host of the From the Front Porch podcast, which is one of my very, very favorite book podcasts. It probably is my number one favorite, actually.
How exciting. She's wonderful.
She's wonderful. And y'all, I've already recorded the episode. We talked for almost 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And don't worry, the episode is not going to be 2 hours long. I realize that is astronomical. There's no way you want to listen to me for, you might want to listen to Annie for 2 hours, probably not me, but it will be longer than normal. I'm not going to cut an hour out of it.
Oh, I think it'll be worth it.
I think so too. I don't think anyone's going to be mad that it's going to be longer. And finally, don't forget to go to sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast/guest application to apply to be on a mini episode of the show. Talk to you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions, especially since we're just starting out. Find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. Happy reading!